during while you're growing those things, they're going to be changing that clay into a more fruitful soil breakdown, the same way if you were to add the organic matter and do it yourself. So it would do it naturally for you. And then we have vegetables such as asparagus. Things like asparagus are perennial. They call them perennial plants. And what does that mean? That means they come back each year on their own. Now, when you're growing asparagus, this is one thing that's big that sticks out when it comes to asparagus. I don't know if anybody likes asparagus as much as me, but I love it. It takes 3 years from the moment you from when you first sow that seed and plant it before you can start consuming it. So once you plant asparagus, you got to make sure as you pick your location and you determine your soil levels and you determine the vessel in which you're going to plant these things, you got to know that you're going to be dedicating that location to this asparagus because you can't even eat it for 3 years. You know, so as we do our research and determine what kind of things we want to grow to feed our families, we need to learn about those vegetables as well, because there's sometimes there's some idiosyncrasies that aren't well known or well publicized that when you find these things out, it might make you make a different decision on whether you even want to grow it or where you're going to grow those things at on your property or on your wherever you want to be growing your vegetables and things of that nature at.
So like you.
Huh.
When you say that you can't consume asparagus after at least 3 years of growing it, I guess when is it like proper for harvest, or when can you pull it out of the ground? Is that at the 3 year mark, or is there something, there's a process between it? I'm not sure if you want to get into that, but I was just interested.
Con, now the beautiful thing about asparagus is you don't necessarily pull it out of the ground when you start to harvest it. It grows like what can I describe to like small branches or trees straight out of the ground. They just grow straight up. There's not no leaves involved or any of these things, right? So what you do when you are ready to harvest it is you just snip them off at the top. Now, like I just told you, it's a perennial plant, so it's going to come back each year. So you're basically just taking off what you want to eat, leaving the plant to its to do its thing, and it'll be keep coming back and feeding you every year. Now, with my gardens, what I like to do, because, you know, I got a decent sized family, but I plant so much food that I don't have to pick everything. So I go out there and I just trim the plant back, pick enough for my wife to prepare for that evening for that meal with a love for leftovers, because I like leftovers. I eat some more the next day after that. And I still leave the plant to continue to grow and blossom for me. Now, we had a Zoom a couple, maybe a week ago, and my phone was acting up, so I couldn't show y'all everything. But as you trim things back and the plants keep growing, they will start to do what is called bolting. And what that simply means is the plant is going into seed mode. It's going to reproduction mode. Now it's going to be producing flowers and seeds and things of that nature. And what that does is it's good when you're ready, getting towards the end of the growth season, and you want to get your own seeds for free. Again, we're talking about the expense of doing this, the investment of this thing. You can buy one-time seeds for the type of stuff you like to grow and grow it. At the end of this growing season, get the seeds, and you won't have to buy seeds again. You already have the seeds. And the beautiful thing about that is you know for 100% fact that what you get out of those seeds will grow in the type of soil and the location that you have it growing in, because you've already grown it one time. So if you're not ready to do that part, to harvest the seeds, and it's the end of the growth season, it might be the middle of the growth season, depending on how much sunlight you're getting, how much water you're getting, how much you're harvesting from your particular plants without killing them. The plant might go into bolt mode, but what you want to do is you want to cut that. What bolting does is it'll take away the energy from producing you more leaf. It's a leaf, if it's a leafy vegetable, or more fruit, let's say it's peppers, green peppers or something growing. You want to cut those flowers and stuff as it starts to bolt, so that it will keep giving all the energy towards producing what you want to eat. You don't eat those flowers and seeds and those things again. That's just for reproduction, so you can grow again next year. So once you start cutting those things back, when it starts to bolt, you extend your growing season and your harvest season with those things. Not sure if that generated any questions, but if so, bring them up.
So like you.
Yeah.
I was driving. I wanted to ask this earlier. So when you were talking about growing plants inside of like little planting pots.
Yes, ma'am.
Are there like specific seeds that can grow or you should grow in those flower pots, or are there like specific seeds you shouldn't grow in those pots?
You can pretty much grow anything in those pots. depending on the size of the pot. And then what you got to keep in mind is how big is this plant going to get? They have flower plots you can grow on your porch to grow tomatoes right there on your porch. But a tomato plant, depending on what kind you get, some of them grow indefinitely. They'll just keep growing, growing, and growing, and you'll have a real big plant on your hands. You can always trim them back and keep them to size that you can manage. But even if you're growing something in your windowsill, you're going to be limited to what type of things you can grow depending on the size of which that it gets. So you want to keep these things in mind as you do the research behind the plants and stuff that you want to grow. Oh, I think I missed a full answer to one of the questions about the asparagus. Did I answer your question though, sister? Okay. As far as the asparagus question goes, there was part of the question was, do you have to wait the full 3-year cycle before you can start harvesting? And the answer to that is yes. If you start harvesting it before the full 3-year sets, you will kill your plant. And the fruit that you or the vegetable that you get from that plant may or may not even be edible. So you do want to give it the full time so that you don't kill the plant. Again, we're talking about a perennial plant, which is one that comes back every year on its own. You won't have to do anything. So the two type of plants, I forgot to say perennial, they come back on their own. Then you have annual, and then annuals, you have to plant annually. You have to plant them yourself every single year in order for them to produce fruit for you. So again, when we get back to things of you harvesting your seeds at the end of the growth season, or you choosing a location where once you plant this thing, it's going to come back for you every year. Another perennial plant that I have in my backyard is strawberries. Strawberries come back on their own. I have to do nothing. I got a bowl of them in the refrigerator right now. And the beautiful thing about it, this is the second year with my strawberries. They're starting to produce fruit at the same time. Last year was sporadic. I get 2-3 here, 2-3 there. Right now I'm getting 20 at a time ripening at the same time as they producing more each time you harvest. Another significant thing when you have plants such as that, whether it's bell peppers, strawberries, corn, things of that nature, you do want to harvest the fruit from the plant. It will encourage it to produce more. If you're growing it, say you're not ready to eat it, you might want to still harvest it if you got to sell it or give it away so that your plant continues to produce more fruit, or else it'll go into a dormant stage and just be chilling. You want your plant to be working for you the same way you're working for it.
Salaki.
Khan.
I was wondering, brother, if you could, I guess, explain the difference between, you know, regular plant and hydroponic. Because I'm interested in that.
So the hydroponic situation setup, it's a lot less space consuming generally, and you don't need dirt. They have different kind of forms of substrate, whether it's lava rock, small gravel, things of this nature, and you have water running through the roots. The roots just need the water. Now the water you're running through these roots, you're going to be adding the chemicals to the water that the plants need to survive, all the different, so they're keeping the pH right, the nitrogen that would normally be in the soil, you're going to just put it straight to the water. Now, a hydroponic setup, the yield can be way bigger than growing outside or growing in the dirt, because it's like getting an IV shot versus you taking a pill. You get what I'm saying? It's going straight inside there and doing what it needs to do. But again, depending on what you're growing, because even with that setup, it takes normally a small amount of space, but whatever you're growing is going to need its space. So if you're growing a large plant in a hydroponic setup, you're going to get a large yield, but you still got to leave room for that plant to get to maturity and have the space that it's going to need to survive and produce for you. Did I ask you a question?
Con, not a one. And I had one other question.
Con, bring it up.
I don't know if you're going to go into this anyway, but just going into getting the seeds started, you know, to sprout, how do you go about doing that?
Okay, now we have a couple different options when it comes to sprouting the seeds. Some plants, seeds, you can throw them on the ground, they're going to grow. Other things you got to care for and bring them along gently. So depending on what the plan is, will depend on how you sow that seed. And again, this comes with the research into what we're going to grow and what information we have or need to obtain as we do our research about this particular plant. So if you had a particular plant in mind, I go into it. But I'll give you an example. Growing asparagus from seed, that's just because we're on asparagus, I keep it there. It's not easy to do. It's not easy to do. It takes a lot of care and a lot of attention. As you get that seed to sprout, and come along from a little sprout to a full plant, let alone a 3-year wait if you just, you know, once you get it out there into the dirt. Then you have things such as green beans or corn. They'll damn near grow in your hand if you stay still long enough with the seed in the dirt. You know what I'm saying? And those things are very easy to sow. You can go straight to the dirt with them if you're growing in a garden outside. One thing I didn't touch on also is, as far as a grow option, would be raised flower beds. Let's say you have a really bad soil, rocky, a lot of wood, roots, things of that nature. Even shit could be garbage, glass, concrete. You can do a raised flower bed. And what you do with that is you would build a box. You can have it up off the ground or you can have it directly on the ground, and you put your own soil in there, your own mixture of organic matter, things of that nature, and stuff grows well. Those strawberries I was mentioning to you a minute ago, I grow those in a raised flower bed. I grow potatoes in a raised flower bed. I actually have my asparagus in a raised flower bed as well. So the good thing about when you grow potatoes in a raised flower bed, potatoes grow good in buckets too. I love growing potatoes. It's one of my favorite vegetables to grow. Don't ask me why. It's like a surprise every time you go to harvest. But when you grow them in a raised flower bed or a bucket, you guarantee damn near not to miss any. If it's a bucket, you're not going to miss any of the potatoes. But if it's a raised flower bed, it's going to be a lot less potatoes you're going to miss. When you grow them directly into the ground, you're going to be digging them up, but you're liable to miss some. You don't know if you got them all. But if you have them in a contained location, you will definitely get all the potatoes. Now, last season, I grew sweet potatoes in my raised flower bed. I was getting sweet potatoes. I got a big head. So you see how big this thing is across my head? Potatoes this big out of that thing. Now, they grew all summer. And then once the plant died off, ready to harvest. And I had buckets of potatoes, you know what I'm saying? Sweet potatoes. And they were delicious, too.
So like it.
The sister first. What you got?
So I'm interested in experimenting with bell peppers first, right? But I have a question. Most of the times when I've seen like bell peppers grown in a garden by a family member, I noticed that they have like some type of a stick with some string where the vine is like maybe attached to it. Why is that necessary?
Well, what happens is once you start growing those bell peppers, they get decent size. I got some bell peppers out there right now, and it starts to weigh the plant down. Now, if you got 5 big-ass bell peppers growing on one side of the plant, it'll bend the plant all the way down. It's not going to kill the plant, but what it will do is it can potentially damage your vegetable, damage the peppers. If the peppers are touching the ground, so you get a heavy rain, and they're just sitting in that dirt and mud on the ground, it can start to spoil faster. In addition to that, when it's sitting on the ground like that, it's easier for insects to get to them, or even rodents such as a squirrel, rabbits, mice, whatever the case may be. So they stand them up on the stick to support the plant, to give it some more structure so that the fruit that is growing don't weigh it all the way down. That's all that serves for. And that actually will be a great option for you to grow inside. Grow bell peppers, they do very well in hot temperatures. They don't need a whole lot of attention. So yeah, you'll have a good success with bell peppers as well. Did I answer your question, sis?
The water.
Good bar. What you got for me, brother?
So I wanted to ask about that, the raised platform that you're just talking about. I would assume, I'm only assuming, that that would be composed typically when people have those of wood. Would you eventually have to, if it is built of wood, would you have to change that every so often because of that, you know, the moisture that would get to the wood?
Con, and again, it depends. Now, if you have one that's, say, they have some that are on, like Walmart even sells these, they stand like 2 or 3 feet off the ground, so they have a wooden bottom. So every time you water in that soil, that moisture, it will soften that wood up. Now, they're using treated wood, and it'd probably be the best bet to use treated wood for longevity. But if you're able to build these things yourself, it's nothing for you to swap that wood out. Another option you could have to add longevity to that type of growing style is to line it. You could put a liner in there, a plastic liner. It's going to retain moisture better, and it's going to keep that moisture off the wood. Now, when you do something like that, though, you got to be careful because as you're watering it, that water ain't got nowhere to go. So you don't need to water it too much. You want to water it and give the plant enough time to absorb the water, the dirt, enough time to dry out a little bit, because a plant can drown. As much as, like I just told you before, how weird, just like plants, we can drown, a plant can drown too. So depending on what you're growing in that thing, you definitely don't want to overwater it. You can line it to give you more longevity with your wood, Or you can do a raised flower bed directly on the ground. Like I say your soil is not good enough to just grow a garden off of it. You do the raised flower bed. So you put some walls up, keep the ground wide open, and you fill that thing up. In the bottom, you can put, I fill mine up with some trees I had cut down in my backyard when I first bought the house. I had a lot of trees. I got rid of all those trees. I used some of that old wood on the bottom, and you go big to small. So I put wood on it, mulch on it, branches, and just get thinner, thinner, thinner as far as the type of substrate I'm putting in this thing. So I go from wood to branches to leaves to dirt as you build it up. Now you want your layer of the dirt to be at least 6 to 12 inches deep. You know what I'm saying? But you don't have to go, say if you're buying your dirt from the store and you're not digging out your backyard because your soil ain't good enough to grow out of, you don't want to have to go buy 15 bags of soil. When you fill it up the way I just described to you, you can even use rocks to take up the space as well. Big rocks on the bottom. When you fill it up that way, you can go from 15 bags, you might only need 5 bags. So now you save some money. So we back to that investment side of the situation as well with that. Did I ask your question, brother?
Con, I don't want, and I got another one. It's a lock here.
Con, bring it up. Oh, hold on. Before you go, when it comes to that, you don't have to use for your raised flower beds, even the ones you're going to have off of the ground, you don't have to use wood. You can build it out of plastic even. So you have so many options for what you make that raised flower bed out of. It's just really up to your creativity at that point. But you go ahead, bro.
Con, so with the method that you would apply, with the raised flower bed, if you had, if you added a lining in, you would apply that same method to a bucket. Would you say that?
Would need to. Your bucket's, it's already plastic, so you're good to go.
Well, not so like, yeah, I guess I should have been more specific. You know, when you said don't water it too much.
Right. Now, keep in mind, if you're using this bucket to grow your vegetables in, put some holes in it. That way you guarantee you won't overwater and have that water somewhere to go. Now, I got potatoes growing in buckets. I got them sitting outside. And it was just pouring down. I got holes in the bottom of those buckets, so the water going to fill up in it, but it has somewhere to go, so it won't drown out the vegetables that I have growing in those buckets. So that's another option for you. Now, if you got these buckets in the house and you don't want to have that, you know, a hole in it, or you don't have nothing to put underneath it, if you put a hole in it, then you just, be careful with how much water you put in that thing. Time, bring it out, brother.
Hey, question for you, man. So earlier you said that you had rich soil in your backyard. Now my question is there a depth on how deep you put the seed in the ground, or you just regularly just digging a little hole, putting it in? Or is it a certain depth that have to be measured depending on what it is that you're growing?
That's an excellent question, bro. That's an excellent question. You're actually going into next week's class a little bit. What I got this week is about the soil, but when it comes to how deep you plant that thing, it very much matters. You got seeds that are very, the Bible mentions you only have the faith of a mustard seed. A mustard seed is a very small seed. You don't want to put a very small seed that deep into the ground. It'll never reach daylight. And then you have things like green beans or corn, which are relatively big seeds, about big as a pill that you might take if you had a headache or something. Those can go deeper into the ground and need to go deeper into the ground. Then you might have something like a potato don't have a seed. I'm going to tell that. That's something I had to learn too. Potatoes don't have seeds, everybody. The potato itself is the seed. Okay, so but something like a potato, again, you can put a little deeper. Potatoes, when they get to growing, they're very strong and durable. They can reach up through that thing and reach to sunlight. So it's very important to know, again, as we do our research on the type of vegetable that we're planting, it's going to let us know where we're going to plant it, what kind of dedication we got to give to the location that we put this plant in, the type of vessel that we want to plant this plant in, the location as far as indoor, outdoor that we plant this plant in. And one of the most important things that you just brought out, brother, is how deep in the soil do we put the seed as we plant it? Does that answer your question, King?
Con.
All praise. Ashar?
Lock you.
Con.
Bring it out, King.
Con. So, it's on the asparagus. Like, I'm taking all this in, man. I appreciate it, the water.
Freeze.
So on asparagus, I love asparagus. So you said 3 years, like, so you just prune it for 3 years? Like, what are you, because I did landscaping, but I never planted nothing myself. So, like, I was trying to get that, the details to that. Like, how do you grow the asparagus and not eat it for 3 years?
You buy you some asparagus on the side while you waiting for what you got to come up and do what it's supposed to do. But yeah, as you grow that thing, you trim it back as needed. It typically is not going to need much other than some good weeding. You know what I mean? You don't want these other things that's going to be growing around, those thorns and thistles. You don't want those to outgrow your asparagus. You got a baby. This thing is just like a child. As you raise that child, you're keeping all harm out of that baby's way. You're doing the same thing with these vegetables, especially one that you got to take 3 years before you can eat. You definitely want to do your good, do it right. You be in that second and a half year and you forget about it, or you say, oh, I'm tired of that thing. And you won't be eating that thing in 3 years. You know what I'm saying? So you just want to be mindful of the stuff growing around it, making sure it has a clear path, making sure it has plenty of sunlight and that it's watered. And it's really not much much trimming that's going to need to be done on that thing.
So like, all right. The water.
Right quick before you go, Shakal, I want Shakal to speak to. Matter of fact, Shakal, go ahead, Mike Mills, and then I'm going to go after you.
Yeah, I just wanted to add it. With asparagus or any of the plants, like certain plants, like I have a dragon fruit plant right now that I have growing. Dragon fruit might take you 2 to 3 years before you get fruit. What is important to understand is this is propagation from seed. If just say he's already Brother Yasadi has already taken fruit from his asparagus plant. If he was to give you a clone of his plant in passing, just say you passing at Passover or any, you know, feast day, and hey, Yasadi, can I get a clone from your asparagus plant? His plant has already done the work. Now you could take that clone, propagate it, get roots, and now that plant is already an adult. That plant will start immediately bearing fruit on its season. And you won't have to wait the 3 years. So that's how certain fruit work. This understanding is only from seed that he's given. So when you're going from seed, certain plants, yes, you have to wait till they come into their season, and it could take 2-3 years. So it's important to know from seed or from clone. You know, so it's just easier way to look at it.
Another way you can get your asparagus, Walmart actually sells the root, right? So you don't have to worry about the seed, but you get this bag and it's got like three different packs of roots in there. But again, that's gonna be like the brother just brought out. That's similar to growing from seed, because you're really starting from nothing as you get that thing to come on up there.
And the good thing with that is that plant has already gone through the process. It's an adult already. So you'll get fruit that first year. So that's the important thing to understand when you're talking about propagation.
Yeah, the water, man, it's beautiful. I see what pretty much you got to learn. You know what I'm saying? You got to start as a baby in this thing. And the water. I appreciate y'all.
That was the point. Because the brother built the lesson. Y'all gotta understand this read what you sow class is gonna be super informative to be able to have an autonomous lifestyle to where you're almost feeding yourself, you know, anywhere between 60% to 100%, not depending on anyone else, or any of the entities outside of your household. So this is super important what Yasadi is teaching us. The brother Shakal or Mike Mills, he has a lot of experience in growing as well, so he can be able to add to the class and give experience. So the questions is on point, but we don't want to move too fast because this class is going to happen once a week, Lord willing, you know, year in and year out. So the first class was to really detail soil. Before you get into what type of crops and how beautiful, you know, tangerines, and I'll, you know, before we go too far with it, you know what I mean? I may have started that that spiral down of questions, because I was trying to, I'm like, hold on, asparagus 3 years, because I'm trying to learn as well, you know what I mean? I don't know everything, and I yield where I don't know. So I'm trying to learn. That's why I ask questions, so I can gather the information myself, so I can be able to assist my family. So, you know, it's important to make sure we lock in details of soil, questions of soil, ask tough questions about that, so we can understand that, and then we can start to move to the grain. But I'll bounce it over to the brother inside.
Con, and throughout this class that we're going to be doing weekly, I'm definitely going to start going into particular types of vegetables to give you all those details, such as planting depth, planting distance. That's something I didn't speak of. I kind of touched on it when I get to talking about the size of a mature plant. These plants start off just like a baby or a puppy. They're so cute, little green little thing coming up, two leaves on it. But that thing will get big. Some of them get 4 feet tall. So you got to have enough room between each planting so that the plant can do the best it can do. You know what I'm saying? All these things matter. And like I say, I'm always open. If anybody, if the group has a particular type of vegetable they want me to go into, I can definitely do more than one vegetable at a time once I get there. But I'm trying to build us up slow, starting with this soil. You know what I'm saying? And also touching on the different vessels in which you're going to grow thing, and however you want to grow it for what you have available to you, so that we can feed ourselves and don't have to keep going to get this poisonous food with all these different chemicals and things on it out of these grocery stores while they're still open.
So, Lockie, I got a question, good brother.
Con.
Earlier I heard you say that most of your yard is much more of the richer, blacker, darker soil, but you have a section that's much more of sandy. Hopefully I'm heard, I'm driving, but you said you have a section that's more of sandy. It sounded as if you said you manipulated that sandy area with the richer area. So what did you do? Did you just simply remove it and then add or mix it? What did you do?
Con. So what I did was each year, normally grow a winter garden too. I've been doing a winter garden for the last 5 years as well. But each year, each time I change up from winter to spring garden, or summer garden rather, I till it. Right. So I get my tiller out there and I start mixing all this soil up. Now, very first year, that extra sandy portion, I literally took wheelbarrows and shovel from one side with that nice, rich, healthy soil and put it in there with that sandy soil to cut that thing. You know what I mean? And now here we are, what, 3-4 years later, I don't have to do that any longer. I can put those vegetables that grow well in a sandy, thinner, fluffier type of soil. That's where I plant those at, and they do great in those type of conditions. I got potatoes back there right now. I didn't even plant them, and they just come back on their own because I missed some. That's what I was talking about earlier, how you miss some sometimes. But when your soil is healthy and you know, everything's lined up right, all praise to the Most High, things will come back all on their own, even though they're not perennial. You get what I'm saying? So I'm in Virginia. Portsmouth, Virginia, we have very mild winters here. So that soil never froze. Those potatoes that were in that earth all winter long that stayed there dormant and then just sprouted right now that the weather's warmed up and the suns have nice longer days of sun. They did that all on their own. But again, that soil is nice and healthy. And don't get it twisted. You can have healthy sandy soil. You can have healthy clay soil. But you just got to do certain things to get the most out of what you have. Because once you start growing this and doing this on a continual, consistent basis, those soils are going to do what they need to do to even themselves on out. And you won't be just talking, oh, I got a sandy situation or I got a clay situation. No, I got a good, healthy soil environment back there that's constantly generating and producing for me.
Salaga, if I can jump in there, because I don't even know. You said that so humble. Like, what you got to understand, what he just said, like, in our terms, he had two different substrates, two different qualities, one with sand, and the sand usually comes from man intervention. Like, it could have been a pond there before there was a house. It could have been, you know, they probably bought sand in to make an easement or anything. But however the sand got there... however the sand got there, the brother said that he tilled all of it, but then he took some of the rich sand and he took and placed it on the sandy part of soil, rather, and he placed it on the sandy soil. That is what's called amending. He's amending that soil. So he's enriching the soil that has the sand in it. So that's a big and powerful part of growing. Like somebody who does that is considered a doctor of soil. Like he's amending, he's making it well. So is he said it humbly, but what he did was actually powerful because he made more space to grow. And you know, when some people don't have enough space to be able to do that on your own land is a beautiful thing. So most definitely all praise.
All praises, King, the water.
Slovakia.
Bring it out, Joe.
I had a question about where, of course I know where to go to get soil, but what is a good type of soil to obtain? Because when I was working at Lowe's, they had a lot of soil that was made by like Miracle-Gro, and that has a lot of controversy of like putting pesticides and certain things into the soil that could be harmful. So like what type of soil would be good to start off with, like if you're going to the store for it?
As far as we go, being brothers and sisters in this truth, I go the least chemical influence possible. And that means you save money that way too. You don't have to go and buy an expensive Miracle-Gro soil. You can go and get the base soil. Can't think of the word I need for that, the type of soil it is. But base soil is going to be just fine. They have soils out there for particular flowers you want to grow and all these things. They try to make it very specific about this, that, and the third. But that's all a selling tactic for the most part. I found that I go and buy some soil for my greenhouse. It doesn't even perform as well as if I go just dig something up out the back. You know what I'm saying? So there's really nothing special about these soils unless you get a name brand such as Miracle-Gro or something like that, where they've already added their additives to it. Now, these starter plant soils and things of that nature have enhanced nutrients in them for those little teeny plants that I was just talking about. As you nurturing those plants to become mature, you know, you do want to have some extra nutrients in there, but you don't need anything as far as the pesticide additions and things of that nature. Just a good starter soil is perfectly fine. And like I say, when it comes to the investment of this thing, you just go get what's in your budget and keep it simple. Don't overcomplicate it. It doesn't have to be overcomplicated. And then when we start getting the hydroponics, it can get complicated. There's a couple of different variables that you need to know how to do, such as running a pump, having a good, healthy water flow, not stagnant water, how to purify your water, things of this nature. But as far as growing out of dirt, you don't have to get complicated with that. Simple, regular, healthy soil is fine. Anything you get out of the store without those all those chemicals, as much as at least chemicals as you can possibly get, it'll be just fine for you, and you'll be successful with that. Indoors or outdoors. That's so your question, Jordan.
Con, the water.
All praise. Go ahead, sis.
So that was actually part of my next question. I wanted to know, does it matter what type of soil you use if you're interested in growing organically?
No, again, well, you want to get the soils that don't have no pesticides and things of that nature, ain't it? When it comes to, I do everything organic as well. So when it comes to like insects, if you're growing outside, if it comes to insects and things of that nature, even rodents, is ways to set up to protect your plants. I have these, if it was something I would go show you, I have these nets. You can buy this netting and you put it right over the plant. Like my collard greens or my kale, it's these, they look like butterflies to the kids, but they're really these moths, and these white butterfly looking things, and they be out there and they look cute, whatever, in the sun and whatever, but they're eating your leaves. They're eating what you're trying to eat. They're in your competition. So what do? I cover them with these, what they're designed for, this netting setup, and they can't get to the leaves. You know what I'm saying? So now my vegetables still get sun, still get water, and they're protected without chemicals. No chemicals needed.
Are you going to be sharing like that information in the Telegram in terms of like what type of nets and stuff to purchase to protect the plants?
I'll come up with a list for you. Protecting your plants and things of that nature from insects and parasites and stuff like that. I'll come up with a nice list, and no matter where you're at in the country, you can go to any hardware store or local flower store or a gardening store, and they're gonna have these things. Matter of fact, in Esau's setup today, you go on Amazon, you can order right to the doorstep. And all of this stuff is relatively inexpensive. So it's not like it's gonna cost you a whole lot of money to do either.
The lotto.
Car. Was there another question?
Slack here.
Car.
Being that we're talking about pests, what about possums, rabbits, things of that nature, raccoons even? Is there inexpensive ways to, you know, obviously set up to protect against those elements?
Yes. A good fence, good fencing, a small dog, keep them away. And also a pellet gun. I shoot squirrels all the time. I pluck them off from my back porch. Bing! It's quiet. Now, if I'm walking around the backyard with the gun, people looking at me, what the hell is this man doing? But, it's relatively quiet and you can take them out. Possums, things of that nature. I had a possum trying to get in my chickens one time. Plucked them off. Bow. The dog let me know it was out there. Pellet gun took them out. Problem solved. But when it comes to protecting the vegetation, you can go and get like some chicken wire and get some cheap. They got these little poles and you can stab them in the ground. You can tie the chicken rat with a little wire or string all the way around your garden. That way animals can't get through that thing. You know what I'm saying? Some animals will be able to crawl over there, but you might be under attack if they start getting like that. You might need me to come out there and spend the night or something. We take them all out. But yeah, those are some options you have to protect it from larger critters.
Yeah, so basically it'll have to be a thing where I may end up fighting that for a while until I condition the surrounding area to understand that, oh, well, we know not to go over there.
He's watching, correct. And now I need to get a new pellet gun, but the squirrels had learned for a good little while not come in my backyard. But last year they was in my backyard a lot. I was working a lot last summer, so I couldn't really be out there attending to what I needed to. And they tore my grapevine up, but I got a plan for them this year. Just like I was telling Adaya, I've got the netting over there to protect them, and I'm gonna be out there with my eyes and my pellet gun to take out the squirrels as they're trying to eat my grapes. Because I like grapes.
The water.
Salagi, just to add, I think it was Jordan, as far as for soil also, the easiest way to find the greatest soil around that you can purchase is florist. Don't go to a regular florist. Look for the florist wholesaler, the place that the actual florists go to buy their flowers. They have wholesale spots. Go there and you can see what type of soil, and sometimes they actually sell soil. And they actually sell a compost because they do a lot of composting. So that's the best place to go to actually, do your first bit of hunting for some great soil.
Kind. All praises. I want to bring out a couple more verses before we close out for the night. And like I say, this ain't a one-time thing. We're gonna be with this thing weekly. Can't get the phone to stand up now. And so any questions that come to you at a later time, write them down, shoot them to me in the Telegram or whatever suits your fancy. But anyway, let me bring out, I want to get Jeremiah chapter 17. In verse 7 and 8.
Can I go get that for you?
Why I can't.
Con, it's the book of Jeremiah, chapter 17. And so, like you said, verse 7?
7 and 8, yes, sir.
Con, I don't know. It reads, "Blessed is the man that trusteth in the Lord, and whose hope is," Salakian, "and whose hope the Lord is. For he shall be as a tree planted by the waters, and that spreadeth out her roots by the river, and shall not see when heat cometh, but her leaf shall be green, and shall not be careful in the year of drought, neither shall cease from yielding fruit.
God. So this whole thing, as far as I'm concerned, man, when I got into this gardening thing, it's just all faith, man. I just went out there. The Lord put it on my spirit. Get out there in that heat, till this dirt up, plant these seeds, see what happens. And I ain't turned back since, man. So the Lord gonna take care of everything. It's just like in this truth, man. We plant the seed, the Lord waters it. You know what I'm saying? And the fruit comes from that. It's all praises to the Most High, and all glory goes to Him. And I got one more verse before we close out for the evening. And that's going to be 1 Corinthians chapter 3, verses 8 and 9.
God, it's the book of 1 Corinthians chapter 3 and verse 8. Now he that planteth and he that watereth are one. And every man shall receive his own reward according to his own labor. For we are laborers together with God. Ye are God's husbandry. Ye are God's building.
God, what we talking about tonight, as far as getting this soil ready, planting these seeds, harvesting these vegetables, this is husbandry. And all the brothers in here with the earshot of me tonight definitely need to know that and be proud of that, man. And it's something we take pride in. So the same way we be out here planting these seeds, watering these seeds in the world, trying to get our brothers to wake up and come into this truth. It's the same way we do outside in that garden as we try to feed our families and take care of our loved ones. All praise to that. I hope everybody learned something tonight, and hope everybody have a great evening. If there's any other questions, y'all bring it up before we go close out.
Salakia.
Huh.
We're dealing with a raised flower bed. Say if you plant potatoes, you grow that. Your potatoes come to maturity, you pick them. Do you have to do anything to the soil before planting again if you want to choose a different crop?
You just want to make sure you get all of the old vegetation out, clearing the way. You want to clear the way for what you're coming with next. But other than that, there's not a whole lot you need to do to it. Now, if you're a commercial farmer, you definitely got to give the land a little rest. You got to give it some nutrients back. And I'm all for natural fertilizers, and you are welcome to do that as well. Now, when you start fertilizing your soil, you got to not fertilize directly to your seeds or to your plants. It can burn the plants up. But in between planting, you put some fertilizer in that dirt after you cleared out the old vegetation, the old harvest, mix it all up, let it sit for a little while, maybe a week or two, depending on what type of fertilizer you're using. And then you go ahead and start planting again. But if you're just doing something, you're feeding your household, I go right back into the soil, bro. I go right back into the soil. Potatoes don't take a long time to come into maturity. So I probably go 5-6 times growing potatoes throughout the summer. Right up until the first frost hit, I got potatoes in the ground.
Come on.
Now, some things you're going to be growing, they have a longer grow season. So I'm not sure what area of the country you're in. So depending on what area of the country you're in, depends on how long you can even grow. So if you're harvesting your potatoes and you're trying to switch it up and you want to put corn down now, you got to make sure you got enough time for that corn to come to maturity and start producing fruit before the frost hit. The frost is going to kill these plants. Now you have your winter plants or your fall plants that's what specifically that would go right along with what you're asking me, that you can go right into the ground with. You don't have to worry about that frost because they can handle the winter. They can handle those cold temperatures and short daylight season of the season. But it just, again, it depends on what you're planting, and you got to make sure you're planting the right thing that has enough time to come into maturity. You don't want to plant the wrong thing and take 150 days and you ain't got but 50 days left in the season.
Right. So I am located in Vegas, though, all hot desert town. So would that be like a longer waiting time?
That's a longer growing time, actually, because you don't have to worry about frost so much. You just got to worry about those temperatures getting too hot. At that point, again, we're going back to what we're deciding to grow. There's a lot of plants that thrive in that kind of temperature, such as peppers. I don't know if you like hot food. I don't. But if you like hot food, you can grow peppers in there, no problem. They do well in very high temperatures and very low water. But as long as your watering setup is good, that long time, you got plenty of time to grow vegetables. Now, in those high temperatures, location, location, location. You don't want to have nothing growing out in the dead sun. It's getting beat up by the sun all day long. And you only watering it in the evening time. I might need to have a mist on that thing all day long so that it doesn't cook in that heat. Or you can plant it in something a little more shadow, a little more shade, not shadow, but a little more shade where the sun is not beating up your vegetation, if that makes sense.
God.
All right, brothers and sisters, I promise I won't keep y'all all night. You know what I'm saying? Appreciate all the
just want to make sure. When we in these classes, it's just like any other tab classes. Let's try to keep the instructor centered on the topic. And we know this is Yesadia's major area, passion. This is something that he does on
the can I be heard?
Ashar, you gotta lock you. Gotta mute up. Can you hear me? Where's Ashar? You in a room?
Yeah, he's listening.
Oh, okay, I think it looked like he dropped out or something. Okay, but yeah.
He's still showing on here.
All right, Con. So yeah, that was the point that I was saying. Make sure y'all stay muted up. The first thing in reference to the Yesadia point, first class instructor, excellent job. The only thing that I would make sure I say is it's an exciting topic to talk about autonomy. Talk about gardening, agriculture, moving into livestock, just growing, period, to be able to take care of the fam. We want to make sure we stay, keep our instructor on topic. So you guys may want to know something because you already know something else. This is not this class. So if you got questions, keep your questions based on the task. And this is a rebuke to me and everyone else. So keep your questions based on the topic that he is teaching on when it gets to the questions. If not, as soon as you ask the question, Yesadia, stop it, or one of the leaders, myself, Faye, unmute, call it out. That ain't the topic. It's that simple. If it ain't the topic, we ain't talking about it because we could be taken away from week 4. We could be taken away from week 31 where we're learning together at, you know, and we got to take our time. So ask questions on what he taught on, because I'm going to be honest, I haven't heard many questions on what he taught on directly. It was just questions about the excitement of all around gardening, which is dope, but we want to make sure we take in what we've learned so far. And then once we've exhausted that topic, we may open up to, hey, what is next week about? So on and so forth. And we can start, kind of speaking on that. Or you can start saying, hey, you know, this is a class that I want to request. Are you going to touch about, are you going to touch on this? What week you think you're going to touch on this? What, you can ask, you can throw that out there and then kind of go from there. But we want to make sure we take the class on pace so we don't run over the scheduled time frame. Excellent class. Appreciate it, yourself.
Con, the water king, the water. Appreciate everybody's attention and time. And all praises to the Most High. Hope everybody have a great evening. Any questions that you have, generate now, later, write them down, shoot them to me in the Telegram, whatever the case may be, or save them for the next class. I will put the topic out. I'll have a topic out by Thursday, Friday of this week, so that y'all be ahead of the game and knowing what's coming at you that way. So your questions can be lined up with what we're going to be talking about in class. Anything outside of that, try to ask me outside of class, and we'll get it right. All praises. Yahweh Bashem, Yahweh Shabarakatha, all praises. Everybody have a good evening. I'm about to shut it down.
Shalom, King. Appreciate it.
Shalom.
Shalom.
Hey, Shalom.